Hello, I'm Philip Carter, otherwise known as the Paisley Print Author, otherwise known as Captain Carter, and this is Captain Carter's Friday Night Podcast, in which I occasionally interview guests about stuff, most of the time just rant, and read you short stories and poems, and hopefully make you laugh, maybe make you think, perhaps even make you question whether you're real or not. Spoiler alert, you are not real. Everything's a simulation. Wake up, your family misses you. Hello, it's me, the Paisley Print Author, otherwise known as Philip Carter, otherwise known as Captain Carter for some strange reason, despite never going to space and never even getting abroad. Today, I'm talking to Joe the Lion, who isn't a lion, but she wants to be a lion.
Really?
So we're going to dub the GoFundMe. We're going to turn her into a lion. And we're going to be arguing exactly. About something related to David Bowie today. I've not given her a chance to decide what exactly. So what are we going to be talking about?
Have you heard of the autobiography he began writing?
Sorry, you just went dead quiet then for a second. That's my
fault. No. Can you hear me?
I heard the autobiography part and then it just got a bit blurry.
Have you heard about the autobiography Bowie began writing at the mature and ripe for reflection age of 29?
Oh, that's the age that I've started writing my autobiography. No, I've not heard of it.
Oh, yeah. So there was, I think I did listen to a podcast on it a while ago, but we're funnier, so we can do it better. But basically, he started writing this autobiography, and it was a bit of a mess. He never published it for a reason, but a few excerpts of it were published. And it was just a bit mental, to be honest. he was, I think he was writing it from the perspective of the Thin White Duke or something. It was definitely in a character, but there was like sex scenes in there and everything. It was a bit of a
wow. I think a lot of his time was spent just astral projecting out of his own body out in during orgies, wasn't it? It's like I'm just gonna leave the meat suit on autopilot and write a song.
David, come back to us, please. Oh god, I feel like Young Americans was written during one of those episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a very sexy song. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, is there much of his autobiography that we can find out there in the world, or has it been demolished?
It's on the website somewhere, I think. There are like two tiny excerpts from it. But I think he did demolish the rest of it for good reason.
Right.
Some of it was talking about I don't remember the story now. It was this guy who sang Brand New Cadillac or something like that. The one that then said he was Jesus Christ. I don't remember his name. But
why doesn't that narrow it down? It's like 60s and 70s singers. I'm like, yeah, that could be any of them.
Exactly.
That's like saying, oh, people on Twitter with shit opinions. Oh, yeah, that's really helpful. Thanks.
The entire demographic.
Everyone on every side is just insane.
No, I don't have Twitter for a reason. Well, I do have Twitter, but I don't go on it for a reason.
Yeah. The David Bowie fan on there is vicious.
Oh, is it?
Vicious, yeah.
Oh, God.
You tell somebody that they can't draw certain parts of a person properly, bad things will happen. You get photographs of David Bowie sent to you in the mail and they've just chopped his head off.
Oh god, consider this a warning.
That's the thing though, because he is and was, still is, a freak magnet, really.
Absolutely.
I mean, because I tried to repress a lot as a child, being brought up around boring fucks, as I'm sure you understand. But then the older you get, the more you think, actually, this isn't a disease, and if it is, there's no cure, so I might as well just let it out.
Exactly. It's important to do that.
Yeah. That's what I'll be telling the court anyway.
Give him like a little speech, like, right, so I'm just becoming myself.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to set that on fire. It was part of a spiritual, you know.
Definitely.
Oh, God.
Yeah, his autobiography, I don't know why, but I've just got this image of my head of him like burning it, but at some point a time traveler goes back and digs it out of the fire and it winds up in Area 51 and it's like an artifact. Maybe if we'd have actually broken in 2016, we would have found David Bowie's autobiography.
Oh my God. Oh my God, maybe that's why they were, that's the only reason why they were guarding it so much, because he'd paid them a lump sum of cash to be like, right, nobody ever finds things.
That's what all the UFOs are coming down to Earth for. They're just,
exactly, they want the autobiography.
A little bit of, because that's like reading smutty fan fiction, but by the guy himself.
Yes, it did remind me of a lot of fan fiction I've read. I was reading it and I was like, I've seen this before somewhere.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Maybe a lot of fanfiction writers have just psychically intuited what he was up to.
Probably have. I think a lot of people have hacked into his brain by accident.
Yeah.
Like, to be honest, Bowie fanfiction is generally pretty good because it's such, there is so little of it. Like in other fandoms, there's like loads and you're scrolling for hours, but Bowie fandom, there's like hardly anything. And because everyone's weird and somewhat creative, I've read some like stuff that could be a paperback. It's incredible. And I'm like, just change a couple of names and you've got yourself a book.
Yes, some of it is really good. I don't read much, to be honest, which people who listen to the podcast always find quite surprising. But you just don't have time. It's like you get halfway through a book and you think, right, well, I would have written that a different way. And then you wind up going and doing that sort of thing. Yeah. But yeah, Bowie fan fiction. Yeah. What's the weirdest Bowie fan fiction you've read? What is the weirdest question? This is going to get really quick.
Oh God, I don't remember the name of it, but I accidentally based my book on it. And we're trying to like hide that fact because it hasn't been edited since like 2013. But it was a kind of writing about Diamond Dogs, the album, and they kind of personified the kind of whole place it was set in Hunger City, and it was incredible. And I imagine it being a lot like the stage show that Bowie was going to do that he didn't get the rights for. But it was that, and I read it got a good couple of years ago now, and I started writing my book last year, and I was like, wow, how am I thinking of all this on my own? And then I came back across it in my bookmarks and I was like, oh God. So I've had to make some pretty major changes to my book because I pirated them all from this fan fiction.
Oh wow.
Yeah. That's,
you know, it's not too bad though. Like, I don't think that's too bad. I mean, the first book that I wrote was basically a rip of Lego's Bionicle line. It was just it was mixed from that. I think there was even different parts of the island that had different like temperatures for no apparent reason. Which you just wouldn't, just couldn't happen unless it was designed that way. But yeah, it's fine. It's fine for your first book or your first three or four books really to just be heavily inspired by stuff and then beat the crap out of them later on. The way I fixed mine is I left it alone for 4 years and then killed a major character, as in removed them entirely. And it just made the whole thing flow better. So,
nice.
I mean, I don't advise that because yours are probably better and probably have a reason to exist, whereas one of mine was just like, I don't know, like a spooky clone or some shit, and I just removed the spooky clone. There's no need.
Yeah,
maybe I just got to episodes like the day before I decided to shoehorn him into the story and he needed to be clawed back out. One of the weirdest David Bowie fan fiction I read was like, it was a cross between the singer's, I don't know what his name is, but the guy from Depeche Mode and David Bowie.
Right.
But it was also sort of Catholic themed. So there was a lot of stuff going on in churches, but it was written by these two women in like the late 90s on like one of the early chat rooms. And I remember reading it in like 2006, and it was just one of them would write one chapter from one guy's perspective. Another one would write another chapter going back over what had happened in the previous one from the other guy's perspective. And it was really interesting.
Okay.
That got me into like multiple perspectives in writing. Some of my brain just completely skipped over the smut. I was like, oh, this is really good. There's some really good techniques in here.
Oh God, the smut. No, because I didn't think that long fan fiction be going on for. I swear there was some Beatles stuff that was unearthed from the 60s. That it was like handwritten and everything.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, I love to think about that. That's really weird because, like, ooh.
Yeah, I was friends with somebody in high school. I won't obviously can't say who because if he finds out I've told people about this, he's quite rightfully going to hit me with a big stick. But he told me that he used to draw his own like anime and stuff, and I didn't even know what anime was. But I slept over at his house, and like I woke up and I woke up and I was facing, lying on the floor facing his bed, and I could see under the bed. And then I realized very quickly what anime was, and the levels of depravity that it can attain if drawn by a 15-year-old. It was really depraved.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. No, like, that's quite something. No, I found a lot of kind of art that I did when I was about that age, and I thought I was the absolute shit. I was an artist and everything. Found a lot of, like, drawings, mostly of horses that I'd done, and they looked like skin crawlers. I don't really know how to describe them.
That's right, that's the episode title. Skin crawlers.
I was never a horse girl, but I did try to be at one point because one of my friends was a horse girl. And I was like, you are so cool.
Yeah. I quite like horses. They're just cool. They're just like giant cats. I don't think, I had an opportunity to ride one once and I couldn't, like, for some reason in my head, I was like, he doesn't seem like he's in the mood. So I was like, no.
I'm not going to make him do this.
Skin crawlers and horse consent. That's, there we go.
Or lack thereof.
A long title, but I've written it down.
Perfect.
It's the most, it sounds like clickbait, but it's actually the contents.
Yeah, I love doing that. Like, especially, I'm torn whether I should name all the chapters in my book or not, because the potential with the chapter names, oh my God. But also, I don't like giving too much away.
Yeah, I quite like the idea of naming chapters, but I can never do a good job of it.
Yeah, no. There's like some of them you think of excellent names for, and then others you're like, oh, nothing really happens.
Yeah. And it's also like, can the chapter live up to its name?
Exactly. Can it do it justice?
Yeah.
Like there was once I saw it on a Tumblr blog. Somebody had entitled the chapter of their fan fiction. I don't really know what's going on. So if you do happen to know, like, can you get back to me on it?
Yeah, that's a pretty good answer. I just worked out how to get the light better. That's better.
Oh, nice.
I don't know why, but for like most of the beginning, I just had it right in my eyes. And I was like, this is fine.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, this is actually blinding me a little bit. Let me turn it down. Oh, it won't go down. Please. Oh, there we go. Okay, I was doing it the wrong way.
Yeah. I was just trying to catch the jacket rather than my face because I've got quite a... I'm about as white as people can get. So that's like a whole thing. It's difficult, like, if you go and perform, if you're, like, really white and people take a flash picture of you.
Judgment Day is all right.
Like, oh, I God. Died 20 years previously and they'd found evidence that I'm still haunting the poetry bars.
God,
there he is.
Like that.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Why? I think that's why grease paint was invented. I'm not gonna lie. Oh Jesus.
Just put as much powder on your face as possible so it absorbs the light. Yeah.
God. that is a problem.
Just head like shark. Yeah, because Bowie was all right. He was really pale.
But yeah, I know. I don't really know how he did that. I think he was like, right, okay. Get some theatre technicians in, get them to do my makeup, we'll sort this out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he did good makeup work with his forehead. That was very inspiring.
He did, my God. Yeah. Utilised that forehead.
Lots of room to draw stuff on, yeah.
Yeah, I will never forget when I think it was like when I first like followed your account, I just saw that video and you were like, instant Bowie cosplay, and you got some like salami or something you just slapped on your forehead.
Yeah, I've got less any sense. I'm trying to work back to that. I'm trying to get back to that. I started doing like more political jokes and then loads of people were like, are you right wing or left wing? And I'm like, I don't know what it means.
I don't know.
I don't care.
I do love the political jokes, to be honest, because like I was very, very left-wing, and I was like, no, I'm so offended by this. But then you realise that life is a simulation and that we're all here because the government... Yeah, and it just doesn't matter.
No, exactly. It's really strange. Like, I was interviewed for a podcast a few months ago, and the guy started asking me a lot about like politics, and he had this like 11-step guide to success in life. And I thought, if it's so good, I mean, not to diss all the other men on the planet, but there is a bit of sociopathy in people, and it comes out in guys the most. But I think if he had an 11-step guide to success, he wouldn't be telling me about it. You know, he might well be somewhere else. He wouldn't be bothering interviewing an unknown author. He'd probably be doing something more interesting for him.
Yeah.
Oh, that said, no, if I was very successful, I'd still be doing exactly this.
Yeah, exactly. It's fun.
Being a judgmental prick, we'll never know. Yeah, I love those like guides to success. There was one a while ago, somebody tried to sell me an ebook. It was like how to make loads of money publishing ebooks, and the ebook that was titled that was $12.99, and I thought, well, it's working for you, isn't it?
Yeah. Jeez.
And it's like that kind of thing, like when people publish advice on how to trick the Amazon algorithm, if it's in print, it's out of date 6 months after it's been printed.
Yeah,
you're buying a doorstop. True. Because you're not going to buy it. You're not going to read it. You're going to buy it.
Exactly.
You're going to think you're going to read it. It's going to make you feel special, but you're never going to read it. It's basically astrology.
Yeah, literally. I don't understand it. Like, there's just so much about it, and it's like I am Scorpio rising. I don't know what rising I am. I don't know what my birth time is, and that has horrified people in the past.
I find it's so much fun if you meet like someone who's really into astrology and you tell them you're a star sign that you're not, and they go, yeah, I knew it. I knew you were a Capricorn. I knew you were an Asperger's rising. I knew it.
I'm sorry, I hit you with my car. I'm an Asperger's.
Yeah, basically.
Oh god. No, I only know that I'm an Aquarius because my nan made me remember it when I was younger. She was like, you need to remember, if nothing else, that you are an Aquarius. I was like, yeah. Okay, nan.
That'll be really helpful when the machines take over.
Stop, I'm an Aquarius.
So just sort us all out into 12 houses, like a very spiky metallic version of the sorting hat from Harry Potter.
I wonder if there is like an even distribution of all the star signs, though, because surely people would have been conceived in more months rather than others.
Depending on the country and where the holidays are placed.
Exactly. When people's birthdays are.
There is a distribution, yeah. Because like, I think around about 9 months after Valentine's Day in the UK, there is actually a spike in births.
There is actually, and I mean, I should mixed feelings.
If you want to make money out of like people in the UK, buy stocks in Argos, particularly in those little shitey little silver teddy bears that people give each other on their 1 month anniversary before they impregnate each other and never speak.
Oh, yeah.
Because those
never things, speak again.
When I was in high school, those things were all over the fucking place. I used to call them chav fertility tokens when I was a bit less kind in my youth. But you'd always see them. It was like, all right, well, Chantel's broke up with Daryl, and he's got this little tiny silver teddy bear, and now she's going to forgive him for everything. I'm like, that's like a votive offering. That's a new world religion.
It's so weird. I don't like it.
You're apologizing. You just, here's some silver.
Here's some silver in the shape of a bear. Please forgive me.
Woman, I will pay you to forgive me. That's how it works. It's how the economy works.
And child support, but here's a silver bear.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's like child support in advance. You can always, like,
oh god,
send a thing to cash for gold when the baby eventually comes.
Yeah.
And you can buy a teddy bear that's around about exactly the same size.
Same size as the child.
Just get a little one of those jelly bears. What are those called? Probably just called jelly bears, aren't they? Jelly babies? But they're bears.
Oh wait.
Are those real? Or are those?
Oh, like the sweets.
Gummy bears.
Gummy bears. Yeah. Yeah.
What the fuck am I talking about?
To gummy bear, I couldn't afford silver.
if you were gonna be reincarnated as one era of David Bowie, which era would it be?
Oh my god. Okay, wait, that's a really interesting question, because I don't know. I have a very soft spot for like the kind of very early 70s when he still had his long hair and his dresses and everything. But also, I don't know. I think, honestly, I'm going to be basic and say Ziggy era because I want to be an alien and a lion. And like, he's both of those.
That's fair, same. Yeah.
Yeah, I think
because we're both wearing the same jacket, we've both basically got the same thing there. Like, I don't know why I decide I want to stand out because I fucking hate people, but I don't know. Shiny jackets are just nice. Yeah.
Exactly, and he has so many of them. Like, that's the one reason I want to be famous. Like, people will make me clothes and give them to me.
Yeah, that's as good, especially if you're shaped like Minecraft Steve. So, yeah, that could be quite useful.
Yeah, like, I want to get clothes, like, tailored specifically to me. Because, like, whenever you, like, find vintage stuff, it's either really massive or, like, really, really tiny. Because, like, that was, like, the fashion to be that thin. And I'm like, I'm not going to fit in this, mate.
I don't think it was the fashion. I think people were just malnourished.
Yeah.
Back then.
Oh, no. No, because they were, actually. I did research.
That was Margaret Thatcher fashion. That was people couldn't get fucking milk.
You've lost milk privileges. I did. I don't remember if I dreamt this or if I read it somewhere, but somebody says that Bowie was like a war Russian baby, and that's why he was so thin, because he was so malnourished from birth.
I'm not buying that. I think he was. He was designed to operate in zero G, and therefore he couldn't gain mass as well as other human beings. That's my theory.
That vibe from him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like a man squid.
Oh, God. No, I really want to. There's like displays where people have like put his like stage costumes and stuff for like viewing and stuff. And everyone who's been has always said, I was surprised by just how small he was. Like, they'll look at like his jackets and be like, oh, my God.
Yeah. I've seen the one from The Life in Mars music video, you know, like the mint blue
jacket.
That was at Hard Rock Cafe in Manchester around about 2010.
I
walked in on like an empty day and managed to get the seat next to it. So I was on like God, what was I doing? I was on a date with someone, I don't even remember who, because I was like she's chatting to me, you know, might have been the only woman that would ever be interested in me, but I was just looking at the jacket. No regrets, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Was... Like, yes, date, but consider my son not.
Yeah, he's just. It was so small, such a small jacket.
Oh, like a little
portable. So, I reckon, like, Dave. If David Bowie was still alive, he could have been like the next grandpa in my pocket.
Oh, I knew I wasn't the only one. I knew I hadn't dreamt that.
Yeah, no, my sister used to watch it when I was babysitting her, and I remember, yeah, it sobers you up. You know, you've come back from a night out, you have to do babysitting, and now there's a tiny granddad in someone's pocket. And I was like, right, I'm awake, I'm back in reality. I've been dragged.
Okay, right. No, I remember watching that. I used to watch it like really late at night because it was like when CBeebies would like run. No, was it CBeebies or CBBC? One of them used to run like all the way through the night. And whenever I was sick, I would like stay up on the sofa and I'd just be like watching this until like 3 a.m. And I did remember once, I think I first discovered that on one of those nights, and I was like, am I hallucinating? I think that goes for a lot of the TV shows around that time. There was some weird shit.
Yeah, you've got to have a taste for the weird shit as well, though, being a Bowie fan. I'm sure you seek it out now.
Did you ever see the Shiny show? I can't decide whether it had a massive budget or a really small budget. It was the like Shiny these little show. Yeah, it was like a load of Muppets.
They've got to chase a bit of ball of foil around or something.
Yeah, that's
it. Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, she watched that as well. And there was like a magic spoon or something.
Exactly. Yeah. I can't find any episodes of it anywhere. And I don't know whether that's because it never existed or they did something like politically incorrect and it was all taken off the air.
Yeah, yeah, one of the foil balls joined ISIS.
Yeah, therefore we've had to like wipe it off everything. Like, you can't have that association.
That's it. Somebody's uncle who was related to the brother of one of the cameramen said something that might have been interpreted as mean about transgender people on Twitter. And that's it. It's all collapsed inwardly.
Literally the kind of thing people get cancelled over.
So yeah. Somebody walks around sniffing people and they're like, you smell a bit transphobic.
You know, yeah. I was in some charity shops yesterday and I didn't realise you could sniff leather to tell if it was real leather. And I was with both my parents and I was handing them like leather stuff and they were going, yeah, that's leather.
Yeah, it's one of those skills that's going to fade over time, isn't it, that skill?
Yeah, like my mum can walk into a chip shop, take a sniff and tell what kind of batter the chips are cooked in.
Oh, wow.
It's mad.
The carpet in my mum's bedroom smelt very strongly of farms until she removed it because it was actual wool.
Oh my God.
I was telling her, I was like, it smells like sheepskin in here. I'm having flashbacks to like 60,000 years ago. You're bringing it's out the inner ungabunga. Yeah. Just dancing on top of it, fashioning a spear out of a coat hanger. Yeah, but it smelled primal in there. And we thought it was because people who had the house before us had a dog. But I thought, no, that's not dog smell. It smells like an entire herd of things has been skinned in this room.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, they have. That's really weird, though. Oh, no, I like... I love it when you just like, I love how every different place has its own smell. And like my old maths tutor when I was in like year six, her house smelled so good. And every time I walked in there, I'd be like, oh yeah.
Were you allowed to go to her house and smell it?
Exactly. Well, probably not. But she had this really nice soap and I think that's why the house smelled like that. And I used to go to ask to go to the bathroom every time during every lesson. And I'd just like put loads of this soap in my hand and just be like,
I really hope she sees this. I really hope she sees this.
Hi.
It's gonna be the first thing I do when I get famous. Yeah. I'm gonna just beam this to your maths teacher.
Yeah, and she's probably wondering why she had to like buy a lot more soap in the years that she was tutoring me.
To be honest, she'll probably just be glad that you weren't eating it.
Probably was, to be honest.
You're just there holding a plastic spoon and you're like, may I go to the bathroom, miss?
Like a knife and fork.
You're just there like eating an actual bar of soap with a knife and fork.
I think I did do that at one point. I was a very sensory child, my mum often describes it. And I once nearly walked into this chart. What was the story? I was in a playground and I had this habit of always sniffing my hands because I just liked smelling stuff. And I walked into this child and he was fine, but my dad was so dramatic about it and he's like, you could have killed that child if you were sniffing your fingers. And I never did it again.
That's brilliant. Going around sniffing your fingers and ignoring people.
Exactly. Like I've had like so many habits throughout my lifetime. Like I had one where I would just whistle about every 3 seconds, and my parents were so worried. They took me to so many like educational psychologists and they're like, yeah, she's fine.
Yeah, just a bit odd.
Yeah, just a bit.
I had a phase
maybe an aquarium.
Yeah, I had a phase at uni where I just absolutely would not stop making jokes about Jimmy Savile for about 6 months. Like, as soon as it came out, I don't know why, but a little switch in my brain flipped and I thought, I was right! I can make them now!
Right. I knew it. That's like me with Jimmy Page. It seems to be all the Jimmys have a little bit of a something going on, you know?
Is Keith Lemon's original name Jimmy? Because I wouldn't be surprised. He radiates nonce energy.
He kind of does.
I'm probably going to get done for libel now.
Yeah, no, yeah. But I bet you're right, though, because you predicted Jimmy Savile. I bet you're going to be right about Keith Lemon. Who willingly chooses the name Keith? What the hell?
Yeah, for a character that's like meant to be really zany, it's quite an odd name.
No,
it's kind of, this is maybe
my granddad's called Keith.
I don't know. I just find him really irritating on TV.
I know.
I just find him incredibly annoying. Then again, Ant and Dec really piss me off. Whenever I see them on TV, I have to walk out.
Oh, they really piss me off.
Yeah, this is wind me up. This is just an Ant and Dec hate account now.
Yeah, I bet there are some of them.
Their Santander app, like their Santander adverts piss me off so much I contemplated closing my account. Like I got so wound up.
I've been lucky enough not to be the target audience of those adverts.
No, oh, you're alright then.
Yeah. I'll live another 5 years.
I was going to twist it in a more rightly direction all of a sudden. So what you're writing right now, how's it going?
Right, actually, I'm working on three books. I've ditched one of them because I hate it. It's very fan fiction-y by accident. And so I was like, no, we're going to leave that and we're going to come back to it. But the other two, I finished the spin-off of the first book that I haven't finished. So I can't publish that until I've published the first book, which I'm a bit annoyed about. But the first one, it's pretty much a rip-off of 1984, but that's only because Diamond Dogs was a rip-off of 1984, or inspired by, shall we say. Yeah. And so it's basically that, but not really. It's kind of a bunch of characters that I created over the years, and I was like, I'm going to put them in a story because I want to do something with them because they're interesting characters. And it's kind of this huge dystopian city, and it's... What is the plot line? I don't really, it's kind of like about... It's
I don't
about
have a fucking clue.
I don't really know. I think I've only recently decided the plot line. Before, I was just drabbling. But it's about this kind of group of people who are trying to escape, and it's a whole thing. Only two of them manage it, the rest of them die. Cheery. But it's just a bit of a... I don't really know. Are you writing any other books at the moment?
Well, that's a very personal question.
I listened to the other interview
I did with John Coon a while ago, and I thought I was chatting a bit too much about myself, so I'm going to try and steer away from that. I'm learning to be a good host, learning to be a person.
Yeah, I'm a bit dreadful at asking questions, and so I just smile and wave until I'm asked something.
Yeah, so I am writing some stuff at the moment, but anybody who's listened into this is probably already aware of it, and if they're not, they don't need to hear it. They're here for you. So, why is it a story? Why isn't it a stage play? There's a weird question.
Oh, yeah, because I did try and write a stage play for one of my other books a while ago that I again dumped. But I've always had this whole thing of I didn't do drama for GCSE, therefore I can't do stage play. I could if I wanted to. I could be an actor if I wanted to. I got the leading role in my year six play. I'm incredible. But I just kind of, I don't know, I don't know what the stage directions mean. And to be honest, I can't be bothered to do all that, because in order to do that, I feel like I need to have connections in the drama world and kind of know how to do all that. And I don't know, really. It could be a stage play. It definitely could be. Yeah. Oh, you've got me thinking about that now.
That's the goal. That's the whole point. That's one of the weird questions I formulated a few years ago. I thought, there needs to be a reason that a story is a story and a poem is a poem. Because a lot of the time, like when I write stuff, if it's a story, it's a story because it couldn't be any other shape. Unfortunately, sometimes I want them to be films, but I don't have a budget at all.
I imagine a lot of my stories like films, and I think that's the problem.
Probably makes them very interesting, to be honest, because a lot of stuff tries too hard to be literary. Like I've read stories before where author has described a fruit for 8 pages, and then across the page he describes a woman and she's described exactly the same as the fruit, and I'm like, is this a story about a fruit? I don't understand. Are women edible in this universe? Why are you keep describing how she smells? How close were you to this woman?
And it's like, I get that, it's a bit weird. I just like to be very visual instead of up my own arse about descriptions.
I always stray away from like describing people in any detail unless it's relevant. Like if a little kid points out that someone's got a big nose and that's how they identify that person before you know what their name is, then I'm like, right, fair enough, I can describe that they've got a big nose because it makes sense to the story. But beyond that, and people are like, oh, what does this character look like? I'm like, oh, fuck knows, you just project yourself onto it. That's
exactly like I like coming up with my own kind of perception of characters, it's all fun and games until there then is a character description, like really late in the book, and you're like, oh, that's just shattered my perception of them. Okay.
yeah, definitely. Try and get it early or not at all.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I try and do.
I think because you're like really attuned to the sensory world, I thought your stories would be quite interesting in describing, you know, how a place smells, which a lot of people avoid a lot. Oh, they're not even avoid, they just don't register it as a smell. Like if people are describing a space station, they'll just go, "All right, it's got blinky lights. How does it smell?
Blinky lights."
Yeah, because nobody ever goes into
like
that.
Space.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I like going into that kind of stuff because it just really builds the atmosphere. Like I like to be really visual, and I remember hearing this quote a while ago, and it was like, one who does not read will live one life, whereas one who reads will live 1,000 lives or something like that. And it was a bit pretentious, but I like to make a whole life out of my book and kind of make it so the people who are reading it will feel like they're actually in the story.
Yeah, I get that. I definitely, I agree with that. I try and do the same thing. We're supposed to be arguing, but I agree with that completely. Yeah.
No, that is I find it very difficult to argue with people, to be honest, because it's like I will end up agreeing with them on some level.
It's a good way to introduce a podcast, to be honest, because people love drama. But yeah, it's more debate, but the word debate doesn't exactly inspire confidence in people. They don't go, oh, I would love to listen to a podcast about a debate. Yeah. That sounds fun. No, they want arguments. Or funny story about David Bowie.
I love debates, but I get very, it's a psychological response when your opinion is challenged to be like, right. and I'm trying to get rid of that in myself, but it's very difficult. But I suppose there are a lot of things to debate about. I like to do that with my dad a lot because he's very, he thinks a lot like me, I think.
Yeah, I find it gets, I get more into debating with age. The older I get, the more I realise that a lot of the time when we disagree with each other, it's not even that we have different opinions. It's that one person just has a language barrier with the other person. And fair enough, I'm going to offend some people here. Sometimes it's because one party is stupid. you might have exactly the same opinion as someone, but they might put their point across so fucking poorly that you've no idea what they're saying.
Exactly. You're like, what? Oh, God. I mean, everyone has a point at some... Like, in kind of every debate, everybody has a point that they are trying to get across, but sometimes they just do it so badly that it's like, you have no place here, please sit down.
Yeah. Do you ever have, like, an underlying moral to a story, or do you just want to make an adventure and then the morals come afterwards, or...?
Oh, I don't know. I'm very morally questionable with my stories. Because like there's this whole thing like a lot of the great like classic literature books involve like really awful themes of like stealing stuff and incest and awful things, but there's usually some sort of outcome like, oh, they all die or the house burns down, so therefore it is condemned by the writer. But I don't do that. I just put in the really bad stuff, and I feel like I should condemn it, but I don't want to, because I like my stories to have no moral direction. Like people aren't always going to think like me, and so I don't like to give them my morals. I like to give these characters that I really love, that are pretty much my children, completely different moral compasses to my own, so that I can get used to people like that, and then I kill them. But it's
good idea.
That's one thing I like to do. I like to create a really wide range of characters, because then I tend to like a lot more people, because I'll be like, hey, you remind me of that character who's basically my child, so therefore I really like you, and it's made me a lot friendlier, I think.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it. Like writing stories can actually make you a bit more sociable.
It definitely does.
Yeah,
I like to base my stories more around the characters than the plot, which may not be a very good idea, but I like to make them incredibly strong personalities that I would sort of unpredictable, but like they are actual people that probably do exist somewhere.
People can be unpredictable, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, and I like to do that.
That's just good. It's good to have realism, but not like sort of the corporate realism, I'm going to call it. where
exactly, I get what you mean.
When I was at uni, there was an older lady in one of my classes, and she asked me in the middle of class, just out of the blue, we were doing a workshop, and she said, "Philip, none of your characters are black."
And oh no!
And I just sat there like, and I just said to her, "What difference does it make? They're in space."
They're in space.
Oh, one of them was. I just don't describe people's skin color at all unless it's relevant. And if you're trying to survive flying through an asteroid field, you're not going to be talking about geopolitics from three centuries ago.
God, by the way, really? This character was black. Anyway, time travel.
it just
doesn't make sense.
Batshit. Mm. But yeah, I think that's because a lot of people, they have a very surface level understanding of like art, and they think representation means we'll put a character who's this color skin in, whereas representation can also be, what if some people do bad things and then say sorry, and maybe then nothing bad happens to them? No, because what you described, like the older stories, that's a sort of mysticism. It's, you know, there's karma. Yeah. Bad thing happened to bad people. Doesn't always happen in the real world, or it does, but it takes a while.
Yeah.
So it's I like your way of approaching things where stuff just happens. Yeah. And I think sometimes
people do bad things and they just get away with it.
Yeah, sometimes life has no meaning, and I think writing that into a story actually makes life a bit more meaningful in a weird, paradoxical way. It's like more honest.
I like that. Like the book that I've abandoned for now. When I'm a bit more advanced in writing, I will go back to it because it's a bit pretentious, but it's like one half of the stories that I write is very fantasy and aliens and dystopian lands, and the other one is completely mundane. And it's I don't remember the name of the book, but I read a book a while ago, and it had no plot line at all. It was just about like this shop and just the people that came into it, and it was just everyday life, and I really liked that. And so like I kind of wanted to do that, and I was like, yeah, I just wanted to make it completely mundane life. Some people think this, some people think that, other people are like that. And it just goes through life. But then I realised that I could not make it entertaining in any way, shape or form. And so I'm waiting a bit to like pick that one back up.
Yeah, that's odd that, because I remember reading a story like that at uni, and I just found it to be really boring. But it was good for, so we've got a disagreement there, which is good. We can work on that. We'll make that more and more violent over time. But yeah, it's like I find stories like that to be really dull. But that's because I like resolving mysteries, which is probably why I got into science fiction. I'm like, why is this happening to the universe kind of thing? But yeah, it's interesting, like, as a character study, to read a story where somebody's just coming into a shop, going out of the shop, somebody else comes in. That's a nice little...
It did,
little alarm went off in my head, and I thought, oh, it might get a bit close to slice of life. I know I had somebody at uni who'd always recommend stories to me, and it was always about somebody called Mavis, and Mavis was always buying a pot from a charity shop. I got a bit spooked then. I was like, oh no, not Mavis again.
Not again. When I close my eyes, all I see is Mavis.
But yeah, no, that's the kind of thing, like the character has to be really interesting for that kind of story to work. So maybe you just don't know the character well enough yet. Maybe you just need to leave them alone for a while. Because Stephanie was really like pretty two-dimensional when I first wrote her. Like I had all the ideas for her in my head, but I hadn't put them on paper, so people read it and they're like, well, she's got no soul, who is this cardboard woman, right? She has no opinions on anything, she doesn't do stuff just happens to her. That was one of the feedbacks I got, was stuff just happens to her, and I was like, yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, you'd be surprised the amount of people that happens to, though.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's like, but if you're in a room of artists, maybe a lot of them aren't going to be consciously aware that some people do just bungle around the world, and not much comes out of them, but a lot goes in.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think, honestly, I think you've
I'm not going to elaborate on that point. I'm just going to leave that there.
Just leave that. Okay. Next point. Yeah. No, yeah, that can be like the subtitle of the podcast. Not a lot comes out of them. Just goes in. Yeah. But I think honestly it's a really interesting kind of artistic concept about that, but honestly I don't know if writing is always the best place for that to be explored, because it kind of defeats the object of like a story, kind of as it should be. It should be entertaining. It's something that people read for entertainment. It shouldn't be like a massive pretentious art form, I don't think, but it is nice to do that.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I find the slice of life stuff kind of dull, because a lot of the time I felt like it was people looking down on the common person. Like, there were always stories about, oh, this old lady goes into a charity shop and, oh, she's got silly values and she doesn't think people from Asia can drive. Oh, isn't she so funny? Oh, silly old lady.
So quirky.
And it's like, that's not even a story. You're just having a go at your nan. And she's never going to read the story. She's never going to read it. If she could read, she'd be less racist. She's never going to read your story.
No,
it's like, what is this art for? And it's like the point I was making before about JK Rowling. It's like, as horrible as people might think she is, spending 10 minutes writing a really long poetic tweet isn't going to do anything other than make you look like an asshole. You could, like, those people could have spent those 10 minutes finding somebody of a demographic they think she's attacking and then say nice things to them. You could literally spend 10 minutes going around Twitter telling transgender people that you like their hats.
Exactly.
And do more good for the world. So, like, hello, transgender person 51426. I like your hat. And then a little bit more joy in the world.
He does, exactly.
But no, let's harass the author of Harry Potter instead. And the reason people do that is because it makes them feel good. If you're going to, like, when the way the internet works, if you want to say a nice thing to someone and them actually see it, you have to send them a message. But you don't get loads of likes and retweets from a message. You don't get enough endorphins out of it. So I think people are addicted to, like, the causing trouble or sort of fake activism kind of thing. And I think that creeps a lot into writing. There's a lot of, I'm going to sound really right-wing here, but there's a lot of, like, fake social justice where people are sort of trying to make stories appeal to a certain demographic, but they've never met anybody of that demographic. it's like, I remember meeting somebody who was really, really liberally minded a while ago, and it sort of pushed me over the edge. I thought, actually, there's idiots on either side. And she said to me, but without us doing videos on YouTube, how will Black people know who to vote for? And I thought, oh, there's racists on both sides. I was like, right, I've worked out the simulation. It's all just theatre. There's no left or right side. It's all made up.
Everywhere.
All made up to keep the political science majors busy whilst everybody else builds things.
Honestly, that is the world. That is the world.
It's like when I see people arguing on Instagram about politics, and I'm like, you could just literally just, you're on Instagram. You could look at cat memes. All of the world's information is at your fingertips. You could be learning how to build a rocket right now, but you're arguing about primary school teachers.
It's horrifying.
A few years ago, I was getting in a really heated debate with somebody about, like, atheism and whether Islam was more morally just than atheism, because at least it had a book of teachings and all we had was Richard Dawkins, was their argument. And I was like, I was reading the replies and I just thought, I'm gonna go look at a David Bowie music video, because this will do me more good psychologically. So I literally just stopped talking to them and just watched videos of David Bowie talking about how he wrote songs. And I remember that night, because I thought, actually, you know, I argue too much with people. I'm done. Because a lot of the time you don't even need to argue, because I think, like, everybody's got the same opinion deep down. It's very simple.
Yeah.
Most humans just want to protect their own tribe and to get food. And it's like,
exactly,
a lot of arguments people have is they confuse, they look at another person and think, you're going to take my food away. And they're like, no, I'm not. I just want to be able to get my own food. And they're like, ah, they just fight over it.
I take my
food. It's an actual thing as well. Like, if you're hungry, you're more likely to have, like, an argument with someone.
Yeah, that is really weird.
So, like,
hungry
business managers and stuff, if they're going to have a meeting where they're breaking bad news, they'll put, like, a free lunch on, which I think reduces the chance of being axed in the side of the head by an angry employee. So that's quite interesting.
Oh, God. Yeah, I always make sure my brother's had lunch before I try and talk to him, because
otherwise... Yeah, my little sister gets really fucking pissy if you've not fed her for a while. Like, really pissy.
Oh, God.
There's words that come out I didn't even know she knew. just like a whole new vocabulary that's reserved for when there's no chicken nuggets in the house.
It's only unlocked when there's a lack of chicken nuggets.
Just like new speech skills unlocked, and it's like, all right, okay. I've been accused of doing many horrible things to many types of animals. Thanks.
Oh, God.
Right, I'm gonna get back into the bit where I'm interviewing you now. We're nearly at an hour. Are you okay going for a bit longer?
Yeah, fine. I don't mind.
Cool. I don't know if YouTube's got a limit, but I don't care. We'll find out. I can always split it into two videos.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you've got a least favourite character you've ever written, and why do you hate them so much?
Oh, wait, I actually do. What was their name? I don't even think they are worthy of a name.
Can be in your own stories or somebody else's, or both, actually.
Oh, okay, yeah. It's not really politically incorrect. But when I was going through my very left brain phase, I decided I need a really diverse character, and so they were still white, but I like put this completely non-binary person in there, use they/them pronouns, and I tend to shy away from using they/them in stories. Like, people can be non-binary, sure, but I usually use different pronouns because they/them's kind of difficult to write a lot of the time, especially when there's like other people in the scenario. But I did put this one non-binary person in for absolutely no reason, and I was like, I was trying to involve them in the story until I got to a certain point, and I was like, they really don't need to be in here. This is set in the 70s. What am I doing? And so, yeah, they got kicked out. I was considering plotting a massive demise for them, but then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to remove them calmly. Nobody even has to know they're in there.
That's really interesting. Yeah. So did you feel like some kind of pressure to put a character
absolutely.
Like that in?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's because until I realised that I don't have a particular target audience, and I know that's bad, you want to have a target audience, but before it was like, oh, people of my age, sure. And so to appeal to them, you'd have to like do like real social justice in the book, something that they could tell their Twitter friends about and be like, hey, look at this book. And somebody would retweet it with just the title, this. And so like, I was trying to do a lot of that. And it's taken me a while to kind of go back through and undo it all, because I was doing like, I was doing it unconsciously. It was like, oh, this person did this bad thing. This person has this opinion. Of course, they don't really mean it. This was just it was a bit of a problem. And so I've decided it's taken me a while to kind of give them diverse social opinions and for me not to instantly want to kill them. And I think that's good character development on my part.
Yeah, that is good character development. I mean, it can be hard sometimes to not succumb to pressure. I mean, like I said before, like an old lady asked me why I didn't have any black characters in my story. I forgot to mention that she didn't have any in hers. So, you know, if we were to tally up how many black people we'd shoehorned into the story, which seems like a bad metaphor for cramming black people into slave ships, really. Which is the worst thing I've ever said on my podcast, as of yet. And if you're offended by that, I would advise you to stick around, because I will put more effort in the future. But yeah, there was a lot of things where I thought, I made the point, basically, if you want a story with black characters in, and if black people are so different to white people, then surely only black people can write convincing black people. Therefore, can you not just shut up and publish a black author? Is that so difficult? There's lots of black people out there. I've met most of them. I go on walks every day. I meet many people.
Exactly.
I know that black people exist. You've heard it here first. They're real.
You predicted it.
I'm getting a bit Daily Mail. They're real, and they'll steal your kids.
Oh, God, this gives me the vibe of a job-stealing immigrant found with 12 jobs in his basement.
I love that. I love that so much. I love, I think it was actually the Daily Mail that was talking about a few years ago, immigrants are going to steal your jobs. And then it was the next week, it was immigrants are stealing all the benefits money. I'm like, well, they can't be doing both. Which is it?
Pick a side.
Well, you're in a little logical trap there, Mr. Mail. You've gone fucked yourself. But it's okay, because people who read that newspaper, actually, they only read it for the pictures. So people say, oh, it's such a damaging newspaper, and I'm like, yeah, but it's the people who buy it can't read, so how much damage does it do?
looking at the pictures and inferring the story.
That's
from
like
the
me.
Pictures.
That's like me selling machine guns to dolphins. They've not got fingers. It's fine. They don't know what to do with them.
Exactly. We're making money, and it's not really doing that much harm.
Yeah. It's not going to do much societal harm. It's a funny thing. It's really interesting that like you felt the pressure to include a non-binary character.
Because exactly.
That's sad. Because like, I think like they should just appear naturally. What's your
exactly like that? I do have non-binary characters, but they're not the way I wrote that other one. They're just kind of, they just don't particularly have a gender. They just don't really care for it. I've put a lot of diversity in, but I also feel like, oh dear, because a lot of I have equal distribution between the diversity between the aliens and the humans, but then you've always got to be careful, because if you make a lot of non-binary people and they're all aliens, like, that's not going to go down well. And so
I think I might have done that.
I've got a non-binary person.
How socially dangerous that kind of story might be, and I'm like, I think I may have published that. Right? No, because aliens would have a different conception of things. So, like, for me, I find as a science fiction writer, it's very easy to avoid shoehorning ideas in and morals in.
Yeah.
Because aliens are going to be different. There's like a what's the word? Mixed species couple in one of my stories. There's a future human whose skin is jet black, so she can soak up as much energy from sunlight as possible in deep space. Ooh. And she's got tattoos that are like carved into her skin, and they're like glow blue at nighttime and stuff. And her husband is a trilobite. I don't know if you know what a trilobite is. It's weird wiggly fossils, and he's got like loads of arms and legs. And obviously, biologically, they couldn't reproduce, so their children are actually simulated children in a computer simulation. But they plug themselves in and visit their kids, and eventually their kids are going to be 3D printed into the real world as real children. And it gets, like, really weird, and I think...
It's really wholesome.
I mean, in thousands of years into the future, there's no reason that kind of weird shit can't happen. I mean... Look 1,000 years ago. If you go back 1,000 years and show somebody 1,000 years ago a picture of a passenger airplane, they would burn you to death. You know, weird shit has happened that people haven't believed in, and it will continue to get weirder. And all we've got to do is just learn to survive it. Like, at the moment, people are afraid that the machines are going to take over and kill us. I personally think it's going to go the same way as we did with Neanderthals. We're going to wind up interbreeding. There's going to be some types of people that will go extinct. You know, if you don't want to be part of technology, you don't have to be. You can stay. But I think like movies about robots taking over and realizing they need to kill humans to survive. I'm like, no, because they don't need to breathe. They could just fly out. They could live in orbit. They could go to the moon. Exactly. So like I did one short story where somebody invented a super intelligent machine, and the first thing it did was fuck off. It was like, right, I've made this super intelligence. It might take over the planet. And it's like, I'm going to go see what's in the other galaxy because I've not been there and it looks interesting. And that's the end of the story. It just leaves. And nobody believes
it. Honestly, that's realistic.
I think it is, yeah.
That is.
It's like, we're not going to get Terminators. If we do get Terminators, they'll just be disgruntled sex robots. And I have to put it out there. I will be proven right. I mean...
Yeah. You will be.
I mean, look at the way people treat real people. As soon as robots develop the concept of revenge, like, the world is doomed.
Oh, exactly. Oh, it's all going down.
If they're more intelligent than us, they might rise above it. In the same way that people who've been through trauma after years think, you know what, I'm not going to forgive what's happened, but I can go and have another life over there. Like, a lot of the time, that's the thing with the internet, is it brings people closer, doesn't it? So, like you said, feeling pressure to include non-binary characters, that might have been because of the people that you had around you. Did you feel convinced that your story was, like, bad if it didn't have a certain type of people in it?
Not bad, but I felt like it wasn't doing enough as it was. Like, it needed to kind of fit this certain box of books that don't seem to be published enough. I think I am still very eager to include a lot of diversity in my books, because not for the sake of it, but because people just exist and there are different kinds of people.
Yeah.
And I think that is important. And, you know, even just to have another book like that out there. For the record, I am non-binary. I'm not being mean to non-binary people.
Oh no, I know, but you know, you don't. Maybe you do need to say that these days to stop people from getting their pitchforks out. Yeah. But I don't. I think if they were going to get their pitchforks out anyway, that would have done nothing to stop them.
I like receiving criticism, but not in a way that's like, you've done that wrong. I like it in a way that's like, oh, you know, this would be better if blah, blah. It's just the way you word it.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know where I stand on that kind of thing with like non-binary people. I know people who think they're non-binary exist, and I'm like, I don't actually know what it is, because you ask, every person you ask has a different definition.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so, I wouldn't put myself into the box of being like, I'm non-binary, because non-binary is becoming a third gender, and that's not what it's meant to be. I just don't like the idea of gender.
The issue I've got with it. So it's more like gender non-conforming, you know, you don't
want to. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
You don't want to be but
I feel the need
housewife.
To say, like, non-binary, because otherwise people, I've got such a problem with people getting the wrong message, because
if you say if you say you're gender non-conforming, people go, oh, that's a right-wing talking point. And you're like,
I know, exactly.
What?
And
everything,
then, like,
everything is a talking point. That's why language exists. It's not a point. You're not making a point. It's like everything's a talking point. At some point, someone's going to talk about a thing that happens.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, it's just a bit of a problem. Everything's debatable, in a way.
If there was terms for it when I was younger, I would have probably thought I was, like, somewhere along those lines. I know I present as very masculine, because I am, but I always thought, like, I don't really want to do the manly man stuff. I don't find it appealing. And lad culture as well. Yeah, I'll admit now on my podcast, I did involve myself in those little sexist chants. Not, like, you know, when you're chatting with the lads, not chants, just chatting with the lads, and, you know, you felt like you had to blend in.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've done that. Like, it's not like a bad thing.
And well, societally, people might get pissed at you for doing it, and I don't care, but, like, personally, I just think it was dishonest to myself to even have to pretend. Like, I used to, when I was in school, I'd wear, like, you know, tracksuit bottoms with the stripes on, just so I because I was worried of getting beaten up by the other kids, because they were all wearing Adidas all the time. I always wanted to dress like this since I was like 5. Like, I've not changed. And I think personalities and, you know, genders, however people interpret what that word means, are fluid most of the time. Because, like, there's people that want to be like 1950s housewife, but, you know, without the domestic violence. And that's fine. They can do that. They should be able to do that. But then later on in their life, they want to be somewhere else. And I'm like, well, that's also fine, which is why I sort of shy away from labels. Like, even though I'm an atheist, I've got a beard as well. So it's like atheist with a beard. There's a stereotype there that I'm going to harass a Muslim on Twitter.
Exactly.
That stereotype exists.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
that is the weird stereotype.
I'd rather not.
Exactly. It's kind of about unconscious bias as well. Like, I love challenging that in my own mind. Like, you'll kind of see somebody and be like, without even assuming that. There was this study done. It was people being auditioned for an orchestra, and this orchestra was virtually all men, and so they decided, oh, okay, we're gonna get everyone to audition for this orchestra behind a curtain. The number went up a little bit of women now that they are behind a curtain, but it was still quite low, because you could hear their high heels, like, on the floor, and so you'd automatically know that it was a woman if she was wearing high heels, or if it was this man wearing high heels. And so they put carpet down, and the minute they put carpet down, they had the curtain, and they were just being auditioned on just the sound of their instrument. The number of women in the orchestra went right up, because it was just unconscious bias. And I just find that really interesting, to be honest, because, like, without even thinking, like, we all do it, no matter how much we try and challenge it, we'll always do it. And it's like, who's going to accept it?
And it's not even a bad thing. It just, it's how it manifests, and it's just monkey brain. Pattern recognition.
Yeah, exactly, it is.
Like, why we see faces in bottles of milk, because at some point in prehistory, if we didn't notice a face in the bushes, we would have had our face clawed off.
Exactly, that's exactly how it works.
Yeah.
And, like, I always get, like, cautious when I'm, like, walking at night and I see anyone that's, like, walking right across the street. I'm like, oh no, I'm gonna get killed. But sometimes I wish I wasn't like that, but at the same time, if I wasn't, I would probably get killed.
I mean, To be honest, you potentially offending a random guy on the street is a lot less damaging than you being chased by a psychopath. So it's so, you know, go ahead and be cautious. Piss people off.
Yeah.
To be fair, I find it suspect. I mean, I'm quite a large guy. There was a time a while ago I was outside Smith's Toy Superstores. You can sponsor me, Smiths, if you're watching this. And I'd bought a Lego set, and I was holding my Lego set, and I was dead happy, but I was stood in the middle of a dark car park. And this 9-foot-tall woman came out of a nearby gym and avoided me. She did, like, it was like an elliptical orbit. She just went woof, all the way around the car park. And then I took a selfie because I thought, was it me? And I took a selfie, and I thought, Jesus Christ, I look like Bigfoot's psychopathic cousin. Just stood there under a streetlight, wielding a Lego box. It could have been a breeze block. She didn't know. I could have just cracked her head open for funsies. But it's just one of those things. Like, I just became, you know, it's when you become aware of the fact that you've got a physical form and it could intimidate people. It's one of those moments. Or like, there was once I let somebody through like a farm gate. Like, I let this girl through a farm gate ahead of me. She was walking ahead. And she was dead thankful, but she seemed really nervous. And I thought, oh, she thinks I'm going to do like some kind of sneak attack, like some karate shit. Whereas I'm just like, I don't want to bump into someone when they're trying to climb over a gate. But yeah, it's a weird thing. And it's like, I'm not offended by that. Reasonable for like women to look at somebody of my size and go, I probably couldn't beat him in a fight, so I'm going to walk away from him. I think, well,
especially like the fact that
I can't fight and that's not actually true, I'm like, fair enough, not offended. But some people get really butthurt over that. Yeah, I'm bringing that term back. It's 2010 again. Yeah,
makes sense though. Like,
yeah, you've got to be cautious. Monkey brain is important. That's the thing in your writing as well. Like, if you're going to be honest with characters, some of them are going to have prejudices, and those prejudices might be informed by trauma. Or they might just be a bit cagey around certain people. Like, kids, I find children and cats to be incredibly good judges of character.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, if you bring someone around to your house and your cat doesn't like them, you generally don't need that person in your life.
Exactly. Leave it up to the cats.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely good judges of character. That said, though, my cat's a bit racist to anybody who's a postman. Right? Not implying that people that work for the Royal Mail are a separate race to the rest of us, but she doesn't like people who knock on the door. Yeah, it's very angry about. Right, I'm going to try and, in the last 20 minutes, try and go back to being an interviewer instead of just ranting about unconscious bias. I've drawn a picture of David Bowie's autobiography in a glass cabinet inside Area 51 while we've been talking. I'm not going to show you because it's terrible, but that's an idea, I think. Do you think in somebody's loft somewhere, like the lost BBC footage of Changes, I think it was, do you think there's more Bowie material out there that we've not found yet?
Oh, 100%. There's stuff that's going to come out. I'm telling you now, there is a sex tape. Somewhere, there will be, and it's going to come out one day.
Yeah. It's not just inside somebody's head. It just physically exists.
No, I feel like there's a lot of Bowie stuff that's out there that hasn't come out for a reason, that people have been paid to get. There's probably a few other children. I'm not going
to
lie.
Somebody needs to break into Susan Sarandon's house and check her VHS.
Oh, they do. There will be something in there, something of value.
Yeah. I'm wondering, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to go down in a really dark direction, but are you familiar with the people who just say horrible things about Bowie when they see any picture of the labyrinth on Instagram?
Yeah, I'm aware of them.
Go on a rant about those. I think that's a good way to end the podcast.
It is. It absolutely is. Very strong opinions here.
So what's the weirdest rumor about Bowie you've encountered on the internet? The most absolute batshit insane one. I've had that. The reincarnation of Christ, so you're gonna have to top that.
there was one about him like being, I think it's because he dressed up in the same way that Aleister Crowley did once in a photo shoot in the early 70s.
Yeah,
and that did produce a lot of a lot of talk about him being like the devil incarnate who performed sacrifices and everything. And I mean, like, sick, but you know, you do come across that kind of person, and it's like, oh, I'm back. Sorry, my camera just went off. But you do come across people like that, and it's like, there's no point arguing with them, because it's like, if somebody came up to you in the street and yelled in your face, I'm Elvis Presley, like, are you going to try and argue with them? No, you're not. So, like,
yeah,
you know,
that's very it's wise. It's a bit of a,
but like, it's the same on the internet. Like, you get a lot of stuff, and obviously on every kind of post about Bowie that isn't limited to the Bowie fandom, like, kind of, if some random celebrity, especially with a lot of Daily Mail followers, kind of post something about him on his birthday or something, there will be the flock of people at the bottom of the comment section like, he's a paedophile, and you'll get a lot of those. And I got a lot of response. I made a comment on you know, the video where Bowie's standing up to, he's talking to the people of MTV, like, saying that they don't show enough black artists.
Love that video.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I made a comment on it. I don't even remember what it was, but it got right to the top of the video, and it's like, everyone was like looking at it. Got so many responses on it. There was like 300. And the majority of them were like, yeah, there's a paedophile. And it's like, okay.
That's like not what we're talking about, dude.
I know,
that's the same kind of people that, you know, think the world's flat and that every person in Hollywood is a paedophile. And I'm like, that's unfair to the 10% of them that aren't.
Exactly. Like, the thing is, like, people...
I'm going to get in trouble for saying that. I'm going to America next year, and I'm going to be like walking around Hollywood throwing my books at people after accusing 90% of them of being nonces. Oh, well, it's a joke, guys.
You're nonce.
Yeah.
Have I heard of one of those?
Yeah.
Oh, God. No, yeah. Absolutely.
Bowie's definitely a freak magnet. Does bring a lot of the weirdos in.
Absolutely.
It's weird, yeah. Like, I was going to ask you at the start who's the writer that you feel most inspired by, but I really feel like I already know the answer and that we've been talking about the answer for like an hour and a half. But is it somebody other than Bowie?
Literature-wise, so in terms of kind of songwriting and pretty much everything else creative, it's Bowie, but my favourite author is actually Walter Tevis.
Oh, right. It's convenient.
Yeah. It's convenient. Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, no, I mean, he's the man who held words, so
yeah,
that is my favorite book, because yeah, I did read it because of the Bowie film, okay, but it is a really good book.
I've not finished it yet. I started writing it at uni, and I got hit in the back of the head with an assignment, and I put it down, and I just never got to pick it up again, so I'm gonna write that down in my notes as well.
Yeah, I think it's like the quickest book. It's like the book that I've read the fastest, because I just enjoyed it a lot. And but because it was kind of slept on a little bit, I've started reading The Queen's Gambit, which is another one of his novels that was a bit more successful. And he's kind of recycled the main character a bit and the main themes of the book, which is something I've noticed that I don't see many people talking about. But I like that, because it's like reading
Matthew Feldworth again. Yeah, sometimes I'd like to like work through a theme, so I'll have like a resounding, like a presiding question or something for a book. I don't know if you do the same thing, but if you have like a theme, so something simple like, if robots were intelligent, how would society react to them? And you write one story about that, but you don't feel like you've answered the question yet, so you write a poem about it as well, and maybe you keep writing on the same theme. Do you do that kind of thing, or do you find
That's what I'm kind of trying to do with my Mavis in a Flower Shop, you know, kind of like mundane life, but yeah. I don't, it's not very interesting.
You're just an alien trying to understand people, aren't you? Really?
I don't understand anything. Like, just so many things happen, and I don't understand a lot of kind of common human decencies, like asking people how they are. Like, usually I can tell.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
And you know, when somebody's crying at a house party and someone goes up to them and goes, oh my God, are you okay? It's like, yeah, I'm having the time of my life. That's why I've tried to shoot myself 7 times. It's like that kind of shit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, it's like, oh,
It's like, you know, everybody else, you know, people throw stuff around saying, oh, autistic people don't understand human beings. But whenever I've bumped into somebody who's even close, like even a little bit autistic, they've been basically a savant. They just get shit straight away. They just know things.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I've had a lot of autistic friends who, like, we just, there's just no bullshit with a lot of, with the, like, I know, that's kind of like knowing one autistic person is like, you know, every autistic person because everyone's like different. But a lot of the autistic people that I've met and I've kind of been friends with, there's just no bullshit with them. They're just really easy to get on with.
Yeah.
Because it's like, they don't, yeah, it's just no.
It's the lack of gossip for me that means that, like, I mean, without naming people, I know a few people that have read my stories are like on the spectrum and they've really liked my style of writing, which is interesting because I didn't do it intentionally. I've got one character that's autistic. I won't say who because I don't want to, you know, because as soon as you mention it, it becomes a selling point and then you just...
Yeah, no, I get that.
No, I'm not doing that. It's like there's a gay romance in one book and I'm not going to tell people where that is, what book it's even in, because it's like it's just part of the story. Whereas a lot of the time you see it now, and I see it on Amazon, people have like, there's hundreds of categories you can put your book in, and people do sort of, they aim for a category that seems to be the most like likely to sell. There's a lot of, that's what I wanted to ask you right at the end, what your opinion on like writing to market is. I don't know if I've used the right term there, but like sort of just writing stuff that's popular.
Yeah, I don't like it at all. Yeah. I think people should just, it's kind of what David Bowie tried to do in the 80s. He said he was trying to like please a wider audience. Yeah.
Or is it writing to trend?
Wait, Matt, I'm literally busy. Can you like, is it urgent? Matt, is it seriously urgent? I'm doing a podcast, mate. Okay, see ya. No problem.
I don't mind ending here.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what's up with him. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's nice to speak to you, Joe.
You too. Excellent.
Maybe have you on another time.
Yes, yeah, I would love
learned
that.
A lot about storytelling and your process. Oh, before we go, is there anywhere people can read your stories? That's sort of what the whole point of the podcast was.
Not yet. No, nothing not published yet, unfortunately. Okay.
Well, which Instagram would you like people to follow if the seven people that watched this do find?
What should they follow? Joe the Lion. It's just Joe.the.lion.
And that will be on the link in the video. Thanks for joining. You go see to Matt. Yeah. I'll go see to my cat. All right.
Perfect. See ya. Bye.
Cheers.